Well, I'm Tom. I'm a criminal defense attorney.
And I'm Chris, and I'm his sister. And this is Room for Innocence. Today, we are going to talk about Elizabeth Holmes.
I tell you what, it seems like what started here was somebody with a great idea, somebody who just didn't realize everything that was involved, got everything out of order, and then it just came undone. And then somewhere in that period where everything started coming undone, didn't have a back out plan and is in a lot of trouble now.
Might have started to fib a little bit.
Begin at the beginning. They all the stories begin the same. A child was born, right? Let's go from there.
Once upon a time in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Holmes was born on February 3rd, 1984. Elizabeth's family had a history of success. Her great-great-great-grandfather was Charles Louis Fleischman, who founded Fleischman's Yeast.
So they've got some old money that's been around. So by the time she was born, the impression I'm getting, she had some money in her family.
She attended the most expensive private school in Houston, Texas, St. John's School.
Yeah, I never heard of it. Can't be that good.
Her father, Christian Rasmus Holmes IV, was a vice president at Enron. So Enron was this energy company that went bankrupt after an accounting fraud scandal. So they were lying liars that told lies. And when Enron went under, its employees lost billions in pension benefits.
Oh, that's bad.
Including Elizabeth's father. This is what we call foreshadowing. Elizabeth, sweet Elizabeth, had big dreams, and she did what she needed to do to make them a reality. In high school, she had private tutoring in Mandarin Chinese and attended Stanford University's summer Mandarin program. So she is now fluent in Chinese.
People do that with a purpose. If you do that effectively, it can be a wonderful asset. If you went into the military, for example, and you spoke fluent Mandarin, you're going to be very valuable as opposed to somebody who speaks fluent Spanish, which is awesome. But, you know, I'm just saying that's very focused. That's a very focused thing to do. You're either one, wasting your time. You're either wasting your time completely, or two, you're like, I got a plan. I'm going to learn Chinese and I'm going to do business overseas and make billions of dollars.
I'll give her that. And she had big dreams. She wanted to be a billionaire. Elizabeth began her undergraduate studies at Stanford studying chemical engineering in 2002. Early in her sophomore year, she filed her first patent application for a wearable patch that would both diagnose health issues as well as deliver necessary drugs to treat them. And she started her own consumer healthcare technology company that she would later call Theranos.
Theranos is a cool name. That is an awesome name.
Yeah.
Now, the first thing you were talking about, the patch, when I heard about that, my thought was, no, like there's no way. But how much medicine could you have? It sounds kooky. It sounds like something that might be true someday. So, but I don't know what I'm talking about with any of this stuff. I'm just saying I saw that and I thought that just seemed like bullshit, you know?
She was a forward thinker. So Elizabeth pitched her idea for the wearable patch to a Stanford medicine professor, Phyllis Gardner. And Phyllis was like, this idea will not work.
See, Phyllis agrees with me. Your idea sucks.
And to this day, Phyllis Gardner's like, yeah, I heard her idea. And I was like, the skin is a barrier. It's not that easy to get through. And this girl, like she says, this girl took one course in microfluidics and thought, you know, she'd solve the world's problems. So this lady was not having it. And Elizabeth was like, fine, I'll talk to someone else. So she went to talk to the dean of the School of Engineering, Channing Robertson. What?
Channing's that's a power name.
That's a sweet name, right? Channing Robertson, he was like, I'm not sure it can work either, but I support you. And he ended up becoming the first board member of Theranos. And he also introduced Elizabeth to a bunch of venture capitalists.
Oh.
Athena, shh.
That's what the
Athena.
That's what some of her haters are saying about her, is that, oh, she just wooed the men. She wooed the men.
Because Phyllis was like, no.
Maybe she did. Maybe she didn't. She definitely has a great persona. For anybody who's listening who hasn't seen her, you just Google it, and there's plenty of clips of her. But when she speaks, she's very good.
Yeah. She was charismatic and persuasive.
Yeah.
By March of 2004, Elizabeth had dropped out of Stanford to focus on her business, using her tuition money as initial funding for Theranos. The name Theranos comes from a combination of therapy and diagnosis.
Theranos. Nobody knows what. Oh, I know what that means. Nobody knows what it means, but it sounds cool. Theranos. Whatever.
It is said that Elizabeth wanted to be the next Steve Jobs.
You're right. She did. She totally copied his thing with the turtlenecks and everything else. She looks like him. Why not? It worked.
And she spoke in a very deep voice.
That was interesting. Also, her voice was cool. I remember, again, watching it thinking, wow, I see why people are listening. But you learn about her voice. That wasn't her real voice. It was interesting. And it set her apart.
It did. It set her apart. It made her interesting.
Whenever she starts howling, I'm just going to pause for a second. You know what I mean? Because if we can try to pause it after.
You don't think our listeners are going to like Athena?
If they like her, guys, that's awesome.
Right? Cool.
I would probably appreciate it. But my dog's here. She's excited. I honestly think she feels the energy, that kind of what's going on. She doesn't understand what's happening because I'm very excited and I'm talking to a microphone by myself with her. So that's what's happening. But anyway, she has a very captivating presence, even if you think she's kind of kooky, you know, but I've heard other recordings of her talking, and all of a sudden she's like, oh yeah. So then I went down to the store.
Oh my gosh. I hate it.
But her haters are like, oh my gosh, see, she's faking her voice. And even though she did all this other stuff that we haven't talked about yet, there's a part of me that is like, so what? Like, she branded herself successfully. Yeah. Who can really do that? So she recast herself a little bit. That's fine. Whatever, she did it. That's not the problem. I think that's great. I don't think it's deceitful at all. And some people have tried to say that it is. I don't find it to be. I think I like her whole thing that she had going.
Yeah, I'm not worried about her turtlenecks and her voice. It certainly doesn't make her a bad person.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it's kind of cool.
Well, I was thinking from now on, I would talk like this.
Hey, listen, I'll buy it.
By late 2004, Elizabeth Holmes had raised $6 million.
Lose it. Come back. Okay.
By late 2004, Elizabeth Holmes had raised $6 million to fund Theranos. 4 years later, in 2010, that number had reached $92 million.
Okay, so right now, at this point, what is she selling?
So that's a good question. The way startups work is you need investment from... I mean, there's different ways to do it, but you can get investments from venture capitalists, and they're investing in you starting your company. So you don't have to have anything that works yet. You know, you're like, here's the thing I'm going to build, and I need money to go build it. So at this point, it's not a big deal that she does not have a functioning product yet.
You know what? Let me make an illusion.
An illusion with an A.
It is with an A. Exactly. Actually, hold on. Let's stop while I do some illusions for your entertainment.
For our audio listeners.
So anyway, okay, this is perfect segue. So there's a movie called Fyre. F-Y-R-E. Fyre, the greatest party that never happened. And you can Google it, and I think you can watch it. I don't know if you have to pay for it or not, but F-Y-R-E, greatest party that never happened. And it's this guy who got together with famous people and got people to invest millions of dollars in a music festival. He actually had a group of people who knew what they were doing in the festival organization industry. And they were like, look, man, you're not doing this right. This and that's going to happen. The deadline was approaching. You had people coming down that had been spending just thousands of dollars. This was like for uber rich people. You had all the influencers from Instagram were going to come to this festival. And as it was approaching, you just see everything coming apart. But the guy that's running the show just will not give up. Just blind optimism to the point where there's got to be some sort of like mental problem going on. Kind of think it's the same sort of thing. She got the ball rolling, didn't think, oh, I'm going to do this to scam people. $92 million. People send due diligence crews to check you out before they invest millions of dollars. So like, she's fooling these people. Like, what does she have? Like, where these people come down, check it out, and they're like, oh, cool, here's millions of dollars to do more of whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. Anyway, but continue with the story. She's really good. It's something. When does the problem start? Where is the problem?
Settle down. There's no problem yet. Life is good for Elizabeth Holmes. Things are good at Theranos. It's 2010. By the way, she's telling people now it's not this wearable patch. The thing now is Theranos' technology that they're developing is the ability to run comprehensive blood tests, up to 200 different clinical laboratory tests. So the kind of thing that you go to the lab and they draw vials of blood, and then, you know, 3 days later, you get a list of all of your blood tests. She's saying that they can run up to 200 tests on a drop of blood.
Even to a layperson, that sounds aspirational. That sounds like it would be very difficult and it would be quite impressive to pull off. Let me ask you this. Have you ever had your blood? I mean, I'm sure you have. You've had your blood drawn, right?
Yeah, many times.
I've never had a problem with it. I'm a blood drawer's dream. I have veins just popping out of my arms. So I walk in, they're like, I want him. And they take me. I always give the double dose and they get all the stuff and I get a t-shirt and some orange juice and a cookie and I love it. Now, I've known people who have a real problem. It sounds kind of silly, but like a lot of people were really, really excited about this idea.
I don't think it's silly at all. I think that a lot of people thought, wow, to be able to get all of these blood tests done on a drop of blood, first of all, who wouldn't want it? It doesn't matter if, you know, even if you do have bomb ass veins, like who wouldn't prefer to give a drop of blood for a blood test? You know, you can go to the Red Cross to give your vials of blood to help other human beings. But, you know, if you just want to know if you have high cholesterol or a thyroid problem, I'd rather give a drop of blood.
And it makes it so much more accessible. Like you don't have to make a doctor's appointment. She started mm-hmm. making this available at Walgreens.
Yep.
And the other thing that she was marketing was the, the preventative aspect of it. Like you could find out you had problems long before you had any sort of symptom.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that she would always harp on. Is that, you know, by the time we find out we have one of these terrible diseases, it's oftentimes already too late. So people were jumping on this. People literally saw this as like the next Facebook.
Yeah, she raised a ton of money. And just like you said, she was a really good storyteller. She had a vision. And they always say a lot of businesses fail because the leader doesn't have a vision. She's like the opposite. She had the vision. She was able to draw people in. She lacked execution. So
let's get to where the problems start. I got to get there. I got so many things to say.
Hold your horses. Elizabeth brought her friend Sunny Bulwani into Theranos. They had met on a language immersion trip to China in 2002 when she was 18 and he was 37.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was a millionaire from selling a software development company and he invested early in the success of Theranos. Elizabeth Holmes apparently did not put out a press release or put up a company website until September 2013, when Theranos announced a partnership with Walgreens to launch in-store blood sample collection centers.
That's huge. Can you imagine? I mean, just...
They were supposedly going to build clinics in 800 Walgreens stores across the country for these Theranos lab tests. In 2014, she appeared on the covers of Fortune, Forbes, and Inc. Theranos was valued at $9 billion. and had raised over $400 million in venture capital. Elizabeth Holmes was the world's youngest self-made female billionaire. Let me ask you this, Tom.
Yes.
Have you ever gone into a Walgreens and had your finger pricked to provide a single drop of blood and get test results in 30 minutes?
Unequivocally not.
Why? Because it was all a bunch of bullshit.
Oh, no. Okay.
And in 2015, Theranos imploded.
Okay. So we just bam.
Oh, my God. We're getting there.
Okay.
Right. You're freaking out. Okay. John Carreyrou.
Yeah. Yeah. Wall Street Journal. Yep. Wall Street Journal, owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, no way.
Yes. Super, super interesting.
That is interesting. John Carreyrou received a tip that Theranos seemed suspicious. And yeah, something didn't smell right. And he took on a months-long investigation of the company, mainly using ex-employees as his sources. Elizabeth Holmes found out about the investigation and tried to stop the Wall Street Journal from publishing Carreyrou's findings, but she was unsuccessful. The article, which came out in October 2015, exposed how the Theranos device called the Edison gave inaccurate results and that Theranos had been using third-party commercial devices to do its testing. So basically, she's like got this huge partnership with Walgreens where she's like, we can take one drop of blood and we put it into our little device called the Edison, and everybody can have an Edison right where they are. You don't have to send it to a central lab, and you put it in the Edison in this little thing called a nano container, and you can get 200 different blood test results back. Bullshit. They were drawing vials of blood from people, not drops of blood. And every time someone would say, well, how come it's a vial of blood instead of a drop of blood? They'd say, because one of the tests that your doctor ordered is not on the list.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Bullshit.
Yep.
And then they would actually send the blood out and use third-party commercial devices built by companies like Siemens to do the testing. They were not using Theranos devices, but she was not telling anybody this.
Hubris is the word that kind of comes to mind.
Some people might also say greed.
And I think what she was saying to herself was, it's going to work. We're going to get it to work. We're going to put the man hours in. We're going to figure out how to make this silly machine. And we're going to catch back up and everything's going to be great. It's just, and then you get to a point where, and this isn't just with her, with people who are doing criminally fraudulent things. It happens to all of us. You get to a point sometimes where you're like, wow, I should have made whatever this difficult decision is. It would have been easier to do it last week. Like last week, you don't want to make it. This week, you're like, man, I should have made it last week because now my life's a week worse in the wrong direction. 2 weeks from now, it's just a...
But I can't back out now.
Goes beyond that with her here. And maybe this is how it is with everybody who winds up in these positions, where her decisions just seem to defy any sort of reason.
She probably started in a good place thinking this is going to work, but then things weren't working. But if you told everybody they weren't working, you would lose your investments. And if you lost your investments, you'd never get it to work. So you kind of stretch the truth a little bit so you can keep your investments because you truly believe you're going to get it to work. And there comes a point where you're just lying.
The machine just straight up didn't work. It never worked.
Yeah.
It never actually existed when she started this whole thing. This is what I've been dying to say. So now we know what's going on. So when the whole thing started, she thought it was going to exist. In her mind, it made sense with her semester of, you know, science class. You know, she just figured she could make it happen with power, with money, with getting people to work around the clock, because she actually did that. She was going to hire a second. She actually did. She hired a second shift. She tried to get her employees to work 24 hours a day. And I think one of the heads of the science department was like, no. So she hired a second round of employees and had them working against each other with goals in mind. And if they didn't meet the goals, she'd fire the losing team. So she completely lost her mind. But she started just flat out lying. Nothing was ever working. Did the things you were saying with these third party products, giving inaccurate results to people, using blood to thin out the, using water to thin out the blood so she can do more tests.
Well, I just want to add a disclaimer, which is like, these are all just things we've read. We have no idea what's true and what's not true. I feel like we should call that out.
Yes, I would say that everything that I've just said, it has been suggested that that is the case.
Suggested, exactly. It is suggested that these things have happened.
These are the things that people say happened. These are the things that were brought up in court. But here's something that happened. President Joe Biden, when he was the vice president, went by a tour of Theranos. And after the tour, he was saying, this is not an exact quote, but this is the lab of the future. And I'm sure he had been very wowed and impressed, and he'd been talking to Elizabeth. Okay, so for the people who really don't know about this, she had a black box. It's about the size of a small home printer. You stick the little vial of blood in it, like you said.
The little nano cartridge.
Your nano cartridge. And it spits out the results. Thing didn't work. So she got a bunch of different shells or boxes, basically to mimic the boxes, filled up the laboratory with like 20 of these black boxes, which didn't work. They probably weren't even plugged in, but they bought these for President Biden to walk through. They specifically bought a whole bunch of extra ones. And so he's walking through and he's like, wow, this is really impressive. And it's just like, wow, like they're just chasing it. They're chasing this thing that's gone. It's like Back to the Fire Festival. Watch that. If this sort of like problem interests you, where people have created this storm they can't get away from.
Yeah.
Same thing. There comes a point where you have to stop and say, this is not working. And then somehow back up and walk away.
So October 2015, this Carrie Rue article has come out in the Wall Street Journal. So this whole thing has been exposed and she's still just like, haters gonna hate. The chief regulator for clinical laboratory quality standards in the United States is CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. I had no idea. I was reading articles and it was talking about the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and I couldn't figure out why. Because that's the main regulator that they needed to worry about. So in January of 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services sent a warning letter to Theranos after they uncovered irregularities with staff proficiency, procedures, and equipment. So in other words, they inspected their lab and they were like, wow, this is not good.
You guys need help, right? Yeah.
That was January 2016. In March 2016, they had not seen improvement, and CMS regulators proposed a 2-year ban on homes from owning or operating a certified clinical laboratory.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's them coming up to you and saying, you're fired. You suck.
Yeah.
You just shouldn't be doing this. You're a joke. And these are the people where she's like, oh, well, oh, she wants to talk to him. When they come in, they're like, no, they got this little guy coming in with his glasses and his clipboard. And he's like, get out of my way. And he goes around and says, you're done.
This is terrible. And then in July of 2016, so 3 months later, CMS banned Holmes from owning, operating, or directing a blood testing service for a period of 2 years. So basically, they just keep limiting her more and more because they just see that just things are just not run well at all.
Really bad.
Yeah, real bad. Shortly thereafter, Walgreens ended its relationship with Theranos and closed its in-store blood collection centers. By the way, they piloted their blood collection centers in Arizona. I want to say they opened like 40 of them in Arizona. They never made it past that. They never got out of that pilot because Theranos never delivered on its promises.
Right.
They were building 800 collection centers across the country, but they never actually provided Theranos services outside of Arizona. And I think one lab in or near the Theranos headquarters. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, ordered the company to cease use of its capillary tube nanotainer device. She loved talking about her nanotainers.
The nanotanner. See, that's the thing. She was brilliant.
In 2017, the state of Arizona filed suit against Theranos, alleging the company had sold 1.5 million blood tests to Arizonans while concealing or misrepresenting important facts about those tests. And the company settled the lawsuit by agreeing to refund the cost of the test to consumers and to pay $225,000 in civil fines and attorney's fees. So they totaled a $4.65 million settlement to the state of Arizona. On May 16th, 2017, approximately 99% of Theranos shareholders reached an agreement with the company to dismiss all current and potential litigation in exchange for shares of preferred stock. So that's a lot. 99% of shareholders would not litigate. That leaves 1%. We've all heard of the 1%. This is like same thing. These are the people with a lot of money that remain and want to sue her ass. In March of 2018, the SEC charged Elizabeth Holmes and Sunny Bulwani with fraud, saying that they took more than $700 million from investors while advertising a false product. That lawsuit was settled. And
how so?
Oh, you want to know? Okay.
Money, obviously.
The charges of fraud included the company's false claim that its technology was being used by the U.S. Department of Defense in combat situations. I mean, they literally told investors it was used by the military, and it wasn't. The company also lied when it claimed to have a $100 million revenue stream in 2014, but that year the company only made $100,000 of revenue, $100,000 as opposed to $100 million.
Wow.
The terms of Holmes' settlement included surrendering voting control of Theranos, returning 18.9 million shares to the company, a ban on holding an officer or director position in a public company for 10 years, and a $500,000 fine. At its height in 2015, Theranos had more than 800 employees. It dismissed 340 people in October of 2016, so that's a year after the Carrie Rue article, an additional 155 in January of 2017. And in April of 2018, Theranos filed a WARN Act notice with the state of California, announcing its plans to permanently lay off 105 employees, leaving it with fewer than two dozen employees, most of whom were laid off in August of 2018. And in September of 2018, the company announced it had begun the process of formally dissolving, with its remaining cash and assets to be distributed to its creditors. Wah, wah, wah.
Oh my God. Wow. So whatever ended up happening to her?
Well, we haven't yet talked about criminal charges.
Oh boy.
Of course, here on Room for Innocence, we primarily discuss criminal cases.
Right.
And criminal cases, of course, are those that involve jail time, not just monetary penalty. So now what we're getting into is, did Elizabeth Holmes commit a crime for which she should be imprisoned? United States v. Holmes. On June 15th, 2018, following an investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of California in San Francisco, this investigation lasted more than 2 years, a federal grand jury indicted Holmes and Sunny Bulwani on 9 counts of wire fraud and 2 counts of conspiracy to commit wire fraud. Both of them pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors allege that Holmes and Bulwani engaged in 2 criminal schemes, one to defraud investors and the other to defraud doctors and patients.
Okay, we're going to wrap up part one here. We'll be back next week with part two, the trial of Elizabeth Holmes. Did she intend to defraud her investors, or was she just overly optimistic about the potential of her product? And with that...
I'm Tom.
And I'm Chris. And the defense rests. Oh. Do you hear the clicking sound from the internet?
Does it sound like this?
It sounds like
No, I don't hear that.